Most of the things that I put upon myself as failure really was when either the system or something that I might not have done as well as I could have failed my students or my Special Olympians or the Paralympians that I've served. That's when I consider that there's a failure, or my daughter or my family.
Hi, everybody. Here we are, episode 3 of the Team CTW Conquer the World podcast. Full disclosure, we're just discussing 90s hip-hop.
And Ja Rule.
Ja Rule. Back when it was like cool to put in like ridiculous skits in between songs. And nothing but the hits. Nothing but the mother effing hits.
Which is what I do every time I put my headset on and get into the mic. I can't help myself. Nick says, let's do a sound check. And I'm like, nothing but the hits, you know.
It's so serious around here all the time. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm pretty excited about how this podcast journey is going. I was, to be completely candid, I was skeptical at first. I always want to support you. So those who are listening, this was kind of Nick's, the podcast was more like Nick's idea. Team CTW has always existed in like doing things, but specifically getting this fancy board that we have and the microphones and the headset was all Nick over here. And I was just, I'm supporting my honey.
I don't necessarily agree with that recitation of the facts, ma'am, but either way, yes.
Rewriting history.
Not the first time. It's been a lot of fun. We've had some really good guests. We're really excited to share some folks that we have coming up. Today we're going to be talking to Dr. Monica Lepore.
AKA Doc. That's what we called her in college. Yeah. Doc.
But I know like one of the things we talked about before coming on was this idea of like we both go so hard all the time. And life has certainly not slowed down with the introduction of a now 5-month-old.
Yeah. So old.
Yeah, but I have needed to really take a reset the last couple of days, last couple of weeks. Eric and I talked about it a bunch. And I've been really lucky that I got to do that. And it's not in my nature. I don't think it's in either of our nature to step down, step back, relax, any of those things.
I don't necessarily think that we do or make that choice on our own. Usually there's something like a headache or we're tired or there's an event, whether it's big or small, something tells us to kind of slow down. I don't know that we are there yet with the ability to be like, I think that we're going to hit this point where we need to slow down. I think something happens and then we're oh shit, we need to.
Zero ability to project when that's going to happen. I completely agree. But I've gotten to a point where, you know, between Team Foster and the law business and the baby. And then there's been a lot of army obligations. I realized I got to a point where I hadn't seen the two of us had not done anything fun together, like as a couple in like at least 6 months.
Maybe more because I did not have if you ask me, I had a great pregnancy. I was happy and nice to everybody. If you talk to my family.
That is insane. Insane. This woman, poor E, you were in a hurt locker for almost 8 months.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been, you know, there's a lot going on. And that's not to say I'm not complaining. It's just the way the facts are. But we, Friday night. Oh yeah, we should talk. Make sure we mention this. Friday night we got to go see.
I was just about to say, what did we do on Friday?
The guest from episode 2, Patrick Brady. Pat was a headliner at the fight down at Philly Live and just annihilated his opponent. So that was really cool to see him tap that guy out in the first round.
Yeah, submission like first round, right?
Yeah. Despite getting tossed across the ring, it was watching two men that are both in excess of 255 pounds throw each other around was definitely a sight to behold in person. But it was also, an opportunity for the two of us to just go get some Nick and E time, which is so, I don't know. It's just so valuable for me to like the ability to just sort of like shut off and like get to enjoy each other. And when it's not talking about work or the kids or, you know, life or whatever drama happens to be like going on any given time.
I know. I even put on like nice pants. They weren't yoga pants. That's a win. I mean, it's a big deal, right?
Like, go out, have a couple drinks, like relax, like not be, you know, strategizing, stressing, you know, analyzing. and just go enjoy a night. And we got to go see our boy, JT Frank was out there from the Consequence of Habit podcast, which is nice to see JT. And then this weekend I had drill, and it, in my effort to continue to reset, I actually got together with a friend of mine from college while I was, down in the DC
area.
Many
moons ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. We figured out we had not seen each other in at least a decade.
It's wild to me.
Yeah. Which is totally wild. Like we are good friends. She was actually friends with Eric Foster. You know, we were definitely part of that group, and it was just nice to, like, I don't know. It's just not something I put enough emphasis on, you know, resetting with people that have known you for such a long time and understand you and believe in you. And I don't know.
Well, that's part of, like, what I think gives you or us or anybody out there who's, you know, trying to conquer their worlds is, like, you surround yourself with those people who are supportive, whether they're present up front in your face or, like, on the sidelines, kind of, you know, in your corner cheering you on. And I think that it's important, in order to not burn out or fizzle out, is to recognize that you need those moments. You need to chill out and ignore the emails or put your phone down, you know, which
there's definitely a look that came with that particular
but
statement,
but
true.
It's true. It's, you know, totally we got to start practicing what we preach all the time. We talk a big game about, you know, conquering these spaces, but, like, you need to refuel. And, like, I tell my clients all the time, right? You have to put gas in a car. If you hit E, you're not going anywhere. You're stuck, regardless of what you're trying to do, whether it be oil in it or washer fluid. It's fuel that's going to make your car run.
100%.
So you need these mental health breaks, whether it's, you know, a drink with your significant other or watching someone, an old man, older men beat the crap out of each other.
Have drink. Very judgy. But it's totally true. And it's definitely, I came out of, you know, between Friday night and then this weekend, I was exhausted because there's not a ton of sleep going on between everything that was happening and driving down to drill and all that, but mentally very recharged and reset. And it was a great reminder that how valuable that is. And also how lucky I am. You know, I mean, like, it's nice to have a partner who wants to hop on a podcast that apparently was my idea. So maybe
I'm saying that the fullness of the podcast, like, you know, like, I'm down for a podcast.
If you're going to do it, you can't do it right. We can't be sitting here recording it on our cell phones. Come on now.
I mean, I'm just surprised that you haven't nailed one of those soundproof, like, foam things.
Oh, there was definitely a discussion about doing that. 100%. And at some point we're going to add a video component to this, but either way, it's nice. You know, I'm fortunate. My teammate, you know, she's always like, it's nice, but we can go sit and just relax, but we can sit here and do work. This doesn't really feel like work, though. It is, like, you know, an obligation, I guess. Here's a reminder to everybody that if you're out there conquering your world, like, get after it, man, but just make sure you're, give yourself a little bit of grace.
And I would
make sure to take a break.
Yeah. And give your partner some grace, right? If maybe they aren't on board the way that Nick and I are, you know, a team, sometimes the partner needs a little bit more, maybe, like, attention, you know, like, it's hard. So actually that was, used to be a part of this group. And one of the things that they told us, do this secretly, don't do it. Don't promote that you're doing it, but put in, like, your calendar or wherever you're keeping a schedule, like, text so-and-so, text your loved ones, say, I love you, because it's so easy to get busy. And then all of a sudden you look up and 6 hours have passed. And now maybe you had a bad meeting and you're miserable and you are forgetting to appreciate, you know, the person in your life. And then, you know, you're going to need that support. You need them to be there for you. If you're going to keep conquering your space, if you're going to, you know, do all these things, don't forget about, you know, those people that are in your huddle. Right. So
100% can't redline all the time. And you got to take care of your crew, take care of yourself. So that's our PSA for today. So without any further ado, we're gonna head right into the interview segment. We're super excited to have Dr. Monica Lepore, who's got some great, she's got a great story.
She's amazing.
There's almost some tears in this episode.
Yeah. Her heart is the purest, the biggest. I just love her.
Yeah. And high energy. Love it. Just, you know, running at 1,000 miles an hour. Yeah. It's contagious.
Yes.
Of course. All right. So without further ado, we'll bring on, Dr. Lepore, and we'll see you on the back end.
All right. Welcome back to the Team Conquer the World podcast. Today, we have Monica Lepore, more intimately known by some as Doc. She's a retired professor at Westchester University of Pennsylvania. She's also an innovator, an author, a philanthropist, a triathlete, and so much more. Monica is truly a professor with purpose. She engaged not only her students, but faculty, colleagues, and staff to think differently, and she helped them realize that everyone has an ability in the physical sense. Persistent is an understatement when it comes to describing her. I barely scratched the surface with that intro, so I'm looking forward to our conversation today, Doc. Thanks for coming on to our show.
I'm so looking forward to our conversation. Thank you for inviting me, both of you.
All right. So without further ado, one of the first things we like to do with our guest, Monica, is what we call the fire for effect segment. Basically, this is a military term we've adopted for our own purposes. So in the military, if you're on target and ready to send effective rounds downrange, that's when you give out the command to fire for effect. So that's what we're going to do. Ask you some quick questions. Don't think about them too hard. And let's see what you got.
All right.
Bring it on.
High socks, low socks.
Low.
Decisive. Good.
Very low. Excellent. I mean, no low. I'm low to the ground. I am only 5'1", low to the ground. Anything kind of like socks like that, like I feel like I'm being eaten alive by the sock. Low socks, no socks, even better.
Right on. All right. Next question. Would you rather live for a week in the past or live for a week in the future?
Definitely in the past. I try to live in the moment, but a lot of times I love thinking about what happened in the past and things like that. That, you know, that whole thing about, would you take this, you know, pill that would allow you to be able to like live some moments over again, or $1 million. I want the pill. I would like to go back and see those kind of things with the knowledge I have now. So I think I'm going to go back. Future? Not too much.
Yeah, I want to hear more about this.
Yeah, someone's trying to rewrite history, and I like it.
All right. Next.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little bit of a fan of that Outlander, where they're back in time, historical fiction, and they're saying, are we going to, if we make this decision, maybe it's going to change the Revolutionary War, and we really can't do those kinds of things. So that's fascinating.
Butterfly effect, right?
Yeah.
Well, we are definitely going to come back to go into the past and talking specifics, but continue on with fire for effect. So what is one special talent or superpower that you wish that you had?
I would very much like to spend a week in each one of my Special Olympians, adapted PE, adults with disabilities. I want to be in their head for a week each, like for a whole year, like take 1 year and I would be in them for a week. And then I would be the best teacher and coach anybody has ever seen, because I really, really want to know what they're thinking and how they're thinking and how they learn better. So that would be my superpower. If I could live in each one of the people that I know's brain for a week, or in their body. We could do that Freaky Friday switch.
Phenomenal.
But
answer.
For a week at a time, for a whole year.
Is it? I don't know if this is weird, but like I got like emotional.
Yeah.
I get emotional every time
that I realize that I would like to be in somebody's headspace, and I just stare and I say, please, somebody give me like that Vulcan mind meld for a second to really know how to have this person understand the difference between slow and fast swimming so that they can actually swim faster if somebody was next to them. That's a, believe it or not, a kind of hard concept. So yeah, it is emotional. A lot of stuff I do, like I get emotional every day.
That's incredibly empathetic, Monica. That was a phenomenal answer. All right.
Thank you.
Next question. Not that we're judging your answers. Don't baby.
No, that's okay.
All right.
I'm good with it. All right. Even if you didn't like the answer, I'm still good with it.
Next question. Would you rather be the best player on the worst team or the worst player on the best team?
Well, I've been the worst player on the best teams. So I'm going to speak from experience. Being myself the best at anything, I don't know. I've striven. I've tried to be the best player that I could be, but so I'm not very good at volleyball. And when I went to college, there was nothing to do during fall season. And so everybody's like, try out for the volleyball team. And I was like, volleyball? I can't stand when the volleyball hits your arm and it stings you. I could never get past that. But I was definitely the worst person on the team. But I have talents that are greater than the physical talents, such as spirit and positivity, that really helped. And my mom used to make really good chicken cutlets. So all of those things together, I was perfectly fine being the worst person. It wasn't the best team, but on a good team where everybody was better than me. That's a no-brainer for me.
I love the chicken cutlets.
The chicken cutlets. Ask my college bestie about the chicken cutlets. It's true.
All right, last question from me, which I think I already might know the answer, is which TV show would you pick to live inside for a week? And I mean, you just mentioned Outlander.
Well, so here is a small thing about me. And that is, I don't have TV channels or anything. I got rid of cable and TV like a couple of years ago. So I don't know that many things. I read every single book that there is. So I'll go with Outlander because I do like a little bit of historical fiction. But my daughter and I were Gilmore girlfriends when, you know. Ugh.
So my
fans, Gilmore Girl fans, when that was on. So I don't know.
My entire when I was pregnant, basically for 9 months, I rewatched the entire Gilmore Girls. And every time Nick came downstairs, I'm sitting there with whatever on my belly.
And like, you're watching Gilmore Girls. I mean, there's just so many things, like, you know, going to the coffee shop, all the funny people that are there. And so there's a lot to say about that show. Actually, recently, my daughter said, you know, remember how the Gilmore Girls, that the parents paid for that really special education? Maybe we could do that and work out something like with the Friday night dinners. And I'm like, you don't even have a kid. What are you talking about?
She's just thinking towards the future.
Future. Anyway, Gilmore Girls is a good one to go through. Outlander, maybe. A little too much violence for me on Outlander.
You'd have to really rough it.
I'd go back to Gilmore Girls, maybe.
Yeah. Listen, if I could explore, if I had the banter in my day-to-day life that they have in Gilmore Girls, and even I might move into that environment.
So banter. Oh, I love that banter. Yes, me too.
Incredibly well written.
Yes, it is.
All right. So I think this is the last question. Mm-hmm. It is, which animal would you love to be for one day?
So I don't have a lot of experience with animals. So I'm not sure. Those little tiny Shetland ponies. Maybe that.
Oh, they're so cute.
Oh my God. Everybody loves them. And you know, there's no expectations of them. They just roam around. People think they're cute. They get brushed. Sometimes they even come in the house.
They just trot around looking at me.
And some people are using them as emotional support animals. Yeah, the little baby Shetland ponies. Yes.
I didn't even know that's what they were called. I want one of those.
Yeah, they're so cute. I'll put it on the list, babe.
So let's go ahead and start talking more about you and how you are conquering, you know, your space, your world. I'm not sure if you want to talk about being a teacher or things that you're doing extracurricular wise, but I think that maybe we can start off with your biggest failure and how you overcame that, and then see how we go from there.
Straight to the chase. Yeah. No, we're not sure. So let's dig
in.
She's like, oh, great.
You know what? I'm not sure if I can rank like my biggest failures, like which one was bigger than the other. Because of course, when you're in that mode, each one of them seems like it's the worst. Right. Okay. So I'm going to talk in general about what things I feel are failures. Because I think that you need to maybe understand a little bit about what I deem is a failure before I can kind of talk about any of them.
Absolutely.
Most of the things that I put upon myself as failure really was when either the system or something that I might not have done as well as I could have, failed my students or my Special Olympians or the Paralympians that I've served, that's when I consider that there's a failure, or my daughter or my family. So that is where I see failure. So in my career, some of the times that I saw failure was when one of the programs that I really worked hard years and years for was going to get the plug pulled. And I couldn't figure out what I could have done to have foreseen this and been able to kind of intercept where the breakdown was going to happen. So I worked so hard for this program for individuals with intellectual disabilities, and all of a sudden the plug is going to be pulled without anybody asking for additional data or any kind of interception. So I felt that was a really big failure for me, that I rested too long on the success, and maybe I just didn't see where this, why this was going to happen. Eventually it got reversed, and therefore it continued on. But for probably almost maybe about 70 days, oof, I felt like a failure. I didn't feel like it was a failure of the program. I felt like a failure.
You're personally invested, right? It's really rough. So invested
in this. So I had to try to figure out, was this an emotional thing? Was I thinking somehow that emotionally I was a failure? But it was all about the fact that I didn't foresee that this was going to happen. So it was going to affect people with disabilities and their careers, then their future. So that was a pretty big failure, I'm going to say.
Looking back, is there like something that would have tipped you off? I mean, there's that famous saying, you don't know what you don't know. So if your program is super successful and you're riding high, why would you think that it wouldn't continue on?
So I still have never been able to detect, you know, and of course, you know, especially those 70 days when it was off the table. I mean, I took apart every single interaction, everything. As both of you know, a lot of things revolve around money. And so there was some grants that were coming to an end. We were able to figure out how to raise more money, but it wasn't in pocket yet. So maybe that's the only thing that I could have pushed a little bit more, and tried to make sure that there was a little bit more continuance of that before somebody started thinking, hey, in 6 months, there's not going to be any more money. So that's the only thing I could think of. We really did do everything we can, we could have at the time. So I don't know. That's not something that I was able to really detect even after the fact. I mean, I've had a lot of small failures, like when you push a person as you're coaching a little too far, and instead of them responding and moving to the next level, they kind of break down a little bit and say like, oh, I'm not good at this. This isn't for me. And then you're like, oh, you know, so there's small failures that, of course, every day there could be a failure in your life. You know, okay, I saw that light that says that my tires are getting low. All right, I'll go later. And then you have a flat tire.
You know? Are you calling me out right now?
That's a sore subject in this household right now.
Oh my gosh. Well, I just had that happen to me too. So
I think
that every day there's failures in my life. But the biggest failures come from when I don't anticipate this failure coming in, and it affects my students who I've taught at college for many years, or people with disabilities who I advocate for and serve.
And I think that's something we spend a lot of time talking about. We always talk about entrepreneurs and change makers and their personal struggles and their personal challenges. But I think sometimes left on the outside are the folks that are impacted by that. So even when you're doing something philanthropic, even when you're doing something for the community, when it fails or when it, you know, suffers or has challenges, there are people that are directly impacted by that. And there's a lot of responsibility that comes along with being a leader like yourself.
I think that that's really what it's about, because when you talk about personal failures or even career failures that only affect you, it's very egocentric to be saying that that's, you know, that's something that's really affecting you. It's really when it affects, you know, the people that you're responsible for, that you said that you'll be responsible for, or that you have promised something to someone. And then there's that failure. Those are the greatest failures. Have I failed and I didn't get on the podium for age group, whatever? Like, to me, that's not even in the list of failures. That's just happens. That's expected, you know, expected things, you know.
So I want to back up just a little bit. So because I think we sort of almost jumped too far down. Like, let's talk about what is the world that you are conquering. For those of us that don't already know Monica Lepore, Doc, what's your space? What are you trying to do?
Wow. I have a big vision. I have a very big vision. So let's take it from a very big standpoint. You know, my world is, I would like to have a place where we all live, where people with disabilities, people who have minority status, people who are in the margins, don't have that space anymore in the margins. I'm really about inclusive things. How many things could we make where we all live together? Specifically, I've been working towards that space with people with disabilities. And I'm trying to figure out a way that using physical activity, sport, health, and wellness affects people's ability to be included into everyday life, everyday world. As you know, Erica knows me as a person who's physical activity, health and wellness, physical education. So I have taken the career path of using physical activity, health and wellness, sport as a vehicle for people to become empowered so that they can then take care of themselves, take control of their own lives, and lead a life that has good quality, whatever they feel is good quality, and also, you know, makes them feel as important as everyone else. So that's, I think, empowering people through sport, empowering people with disabilities through sport, and that empowerment is way bigger than participating in a swim meet. It's saying, if I could do this, I could do anything. That, you know, being without vision is not something that has to hinder me from being a healthy, happy, productive, whatever they call productive person.
Was there something early on, because you've been doing this for a long time, was there something that sparked this drive in you? Was there an instance, an experience, something that kind of like is ground zero, or was this just something that you always, you know, had inside of you?
Maybe it was inside, but I didn't realize it was there. I have a couple of small stories. I'm going to say that I didn't even know that people with disabilities existed, I think, until this one day. My mom and I were walking. I grew up in New York City, so we're just walking in the streets, right? And we pass a block that is, you know, if you're in the city, you know what a block is. But for everybody else, it just is a street, okay? A side street, okay? So we pass this block, and it's a block that my mom's One of her best friends lives maybe about four apartment houses down, but enough that if you look down the block, you could see if they were outside, you know, walking around or whatever. And so we always would turn our head and look down the block because maybe we'll catch their eye and wave, you know, say hi. So we turn our heads, and getting out of the car is her friend and the friend's husband and a young man. Now, I'm maybe a freshman in college at this time, okay? And, you know, I've spent hours and hours a day taking the subway into Manhattan from my Queens home. So I'm not naive, okay? And so I say to my mom, hey, who's that guy that just got out of the car? And she snaps her head forward and continues to walk forward and not answer the question. And I said, mom, who's the guy who is getting out of Mrs. Whatever's car? And she said, it's her son. And I said, she doesn't have a son. You know, we've been to their house a gazillion times. And she said, yes, she has a son. I said, are we talking about the same person? She doesn't have a son. And she says, yes, he is a son and he lives in a home. And I am now blown away.
Wow.
That's
so I don't know what in a home means. And so I'm like trying to just grab my mom's arm and say, what is the story? And she said, he's a boy who's slow. Of course, we would never use that terminology right now, but this was many years ago in the early 70s. And he lives in a home for other people like him. And once a month, they get him and bring him home and he has dinner and they bring him back to the home. So I am
floored.
I'm speechless. I'm floored. I know this person and their family for, I don't know, 8 years. I've been to their house probably once a month for forever. So that got me really thinking. I was extremely introspective at that moment because I just didn't know what that meant. I mean, I knew what it meant, but I thought about that for a long time. Yeah.
It's so interesting because I think especially at that age, it'd be super easy to sort of just deflect and move on and just get sucked back into your own world.
So the question is, Nick, why did I not do that? I don't know the answer to that, but okay. So part B comes probably about, maybe a year later. Now I'm a sophomore health and PE major and I go back to my Catholic grammar school that has no PE. And I say, hey, I'm free on Tuesday mornings. Can I like teach PE to like maybe the sixth, seventh and eighth graders? And they were like, oh, well, let's think about it. And they say, okay, fine. So we make some kind of plan that, you know, I would come at 10 o'clock in the morning and at 10 o'clock, I would maybe have the sixth graders, 10:45, seventh graders, and then, you know, 11:30, the eighth graders. And the first day, it's going to be in the basement of the church. Okay, so there's poles all over the place. There's, of course, chairs and tables everywhere. And so I go down there and I'm like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? So I come up. I had brought like a couple of scooters. They had a couple of scooters and a basketball or something. So I came up with some different things to do. And I'm enjoying myself. But I see that the teachers are sitting on the side with a young boy. Okay. And I am really curious about what he's doing over there and not over here. So they take there's a little break in the action. People are going to get drinks of water. And I go over and I said to him, hey, I'm Coach Monica. And I was wondering why you're over here and you're not playing. And before he even says anything, the teacher jumps on me and says, he has hemophilia. He can't do that kind of stuff. Okay. Part two of my introspection has begun. What? What do you mean he can't do anything? He has what? So, you know, I let it go for the moment and I go home and I read everything about hemophilia. I find out if I had him in my arms, how far, the hospital's only three blocks. If I had to run three blocks, long would it take me to run three blocks? And the next week I said, I would like to communicate with his family. I would like to find out what he can do. And sure enough, he's really not supposed to be doing things when all the 40 other kids are running around trying to go on the scooter board and everything like that. So I come up with some kind of plan, write a note, give it to the mom and dad. And they say, sure, you could do that. These are the things you shouldn't do. And sure enough, I am able to get him, like, he has a separate lane a little bit. I get somebody who seems to be really kind of empathetic in the class to like be in his lane. So he's not by himself. And I just, that was my second experience. Third, I end up teaching swimming during summer camp in the summers. And right after this experience with this young boy with hemophilia, that summer, the head of the camp says, hey, we are going to now bring kids with disabilities in, because this is what they're going to be doing in the schools. And we all look at each other like, what? They don't know what to do with kids with disabilities, which is now, of course, my least favorite thing anybody could ever say. I say it. And sure enough, I have a really life-changing experience that summer with a young girl whose parents only wanted her to be able to stand up in the shallow end when she tips over, because she doesn't know how to right herself and stand up because she has cerebral palsy. And I'm thinking, as soon as her parents are saying this the first day of camp, I'm like, that's it? That's all you want? But I didn't say that. I said it in my head. Why did I say that? So all of these things, Nick and Erica, I still can't figure out, why did I not accept any of those things? I mean, I could only think that my family brought me up with such deep love for humankind that, I mean, I can't think of anything cognitively that would have made me stop and say on those three occasions, why in the world would you only want that? Or why can't they do that? So awesome. That's really what's got those three stories are what really got me into this whole experience. And for some reason, deep inside of me, I've never been able to accept why is somebody holding somebody different? And I know that was kind of a long story, but that's the essence of how I got here.
It's the makeup. So, you know, I always say that people who join the military, that you're born with the want, the drive to serve. And I think that, you know, after hearing you, you were obviously born with this extreme empathy. I mean, I like to consider myself an empathetic person, but the fact that you went and looked up how far the hospital was or how long it would take you, my brain doesn't go there. And that is unique. That is what sets you apart. And I think why
it's you're so interesting, successful. Isn't it?
The amount it's of so lives, yeah, you know, what I was in, you were my professor 7 years ago now.
Yes.
Still, you know, the lives that we've touched. And I remember being in the pool and watching. And so thousands of human beings who never would have had an opportunity had you had not been on that walk with your mom, you know, had you not had that one student or offered to teach.
So important. It really is. You know, I also, beside having just this kind of love for humankind, some deep in here, I also have, you know, a disgust with the concepts of, you know, pushing others away for reasons that are just not true. You know, the myths that come with people and things like that. So those were some things that really kind of touched me. And I have one more story that's not about people with disabilities, but it really helped me along my way. So when I was in grad school, so this is, of course, after all three of these experiences, I realized, you know, I would love to go to grad school and learn how to really do this work, you know, not just have one class or whatever. So we go to grad school and my professor takes us all to the National Health and PE Convention in New Orleans. Never been to New Orleans before. And, you know, if you know New Orleans, you could be walking down the block and doors are open to all the bars and people could be in any state of dress or undress as you kind of go down, you know, Bourbon Street, right? And so we're walking down the street and there is a bar with the door open. And there's about maybe 8 or 9 of us grad students. We're coming from maybe, you know, some Jim O'Brien's or something, having hurricane drinks or something. And I look in and I see someone, a woman in a pretty much undressed, and she was dancing. And I said, I don't understand how somebody could do that. And my professor stops dead in the street. And he says to me, what do you know about her life? And I was like, huh?
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I said, I didn't know what to say.
Right, yeah.
And he says, you don't know why she's doing anything, what she's doing, what she's done before, what her dreams are, how many kids she might have at home that she needs to feed and clothe. You know nothing about her life. This is the day that you will stop being judgmental. And I was like, judgmental? I'm judgmental? And then I was like, apparently I am judgmental. Goosebumps. That was another really big piece, because in order to serve, you can't judge, right?
Yeah.
You can't say, oh, well, that person is paralyzed because they were taking drugs and they drove up the ramp on 95 at 95 miles an hour. They were on the wrong side. They were on the wrong ramp. You know, I can't say, oh, because they did that, I'm not going to serve them.
Yeah, oof. I think so that's so important, right? If you're truly going to serve our most marginalized, then you have to suspend judgment. You have to not impose the same set of internal dialogue you may have with yourself on the rest of the world, or the same standards you may impose on yourself on the rest of the world, because they didn't grow up like you. They didn't come from the same circumstances that you did. And I think that's really admirable. And I think it's an important reminder for all of us, quite frankly. Sort of fast forwarding, and I don't want to like skip over everything, because obviously you've been in this space now for decades, Monica. What are the current projects that you were working on? What's on the horizon?
Well, I am about 17 months retired, and as you know, people were realizing I was going to retire, they kept saying like, "What are you going to do? What are you going to do?" And I was like, "Whoa." I'm sure what I'm going to do is going to come to me. I am not worried about finding something to do. Trust me. And projects kind of came my way. Nick, about 10 years ago, an organization was founded, Diversity in Aquatics. And it, even though it really covers many aspects of diversity, it was really founded to have a voice for Black and brown people to say, I don't swim because all of you guys told us we don't swim, and you closed the pools to us and you marginalized us. We were swimmers back in the day. And my friend became someone who was in the forefront of starting this Diversity in Aquatics organization. And every year she would say, can you please join Diversity in Aquatics and help us out? And I'm like, I am up to my eyeballs and alligators. I promise you, when I retire, I will be there because I believe strongly about this. And sure enough, like the month before I retire, she calls me and said, remember you said? And so one of my projects right now is I am the co-chair of the newest council of diversity in aquatics, called the Adapted Aquatics Council. So we're looking at those individuals with disabilities who mostly are from Black, brown, indigenous, and other peoples of color, where those two things intersect. You got to figure that those people who are marginalized because of their race, ethnicity, or color, and those with disabilities have like this double edged sword where they are discriminated against from more than one angle. And since swimming happens to be the thing that I've been pretty passionate about my whole life, being the adapted aquatics co-chair and helping to start this committee, we've been working about 19 months now, and it's a national organization. And we are trying to figure out how to advocate, educate, and push projects out into the field. So we called Special Olympics North America and we said, hey, we'd like to do like a diversity kind of information training for Special Olympics North America about, you know, that Black and brown kids are not served very well in swimming, and how could we do that in Special Olympics? So that kind of merges my, you know, two areas. And I am really excited to tell you that at the convention 2.5 weeks ago, I was awarded the Jim Ellis Award. And if you know who Jim Ellis is, he is a pioneer in swimming in the Philadelphia area, nationwide also, but he started the Philadelphia Department of Recreation swimming programs, or swim team, PDR. And if you want to have somebody that's changing the world, I suggest that you find Jim Ellis and get Jim Ellis on your program, because
congratulations.
He is such a pioneer. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Pride about the African-American coach who saved one of the Philly pools from closing and then got all the kids off the street and got these Black and brown kids to be swimming, and what has happened since then. And that's who Jim Ellis is. The movie Pride was about him.
And good for you, Monica. I mean, it's so easy, right? If you've spent decades of putting in hard work, and I think it would be very tempting and very easy to sort of retire and then take the easy road, right? And just sort of sail off in the sunset and travel and relax all the time. So kudos to you for stepping
up
and continuing.
I have this one other really big project,
yeah,
bigger even than that. I think one of the things I'd say probably a good 7 years ago, my national professional organization decided to drop a program called the Adapted Aquatics Instructor Certification Program. And that really hurt our field. We were the only ones who were training swim instructors how to work with people with disabilities. And so for the last 6 or 7 years, there has been no national certification in a comprehensive way. Somebody's done a certification for autism, someone and swimming. Someone's done a certification for something else in their own program and swimming. But there's no comprehensive adapted aquatics instructor certification. And I have been working for about 3.5 years on putting that together. And we are very close to being able to roll it out nationwide so that we can get aquatic instructors to take this and be more, have better knowledge, attitude, and skills to teach people with disabilities in aquatics.
Wow.
So that is kind of the really big project that I've been working on, the old night and day kind of project.
That's got to feel good.
Yeah, that's changing, right? You make such an immediate impact on people to start, and
yes,
then also attacking it from the big picture is really, that's, we talk, listen, part of the reason we bring people like you on, Monica, is because we want to be inspired and we want to feel motivated, but we also want to give you a platform. And I can tell you that I'm pumped up and I'm ready to go. And, like, you know, changing the world is something that's so important to both of us, and giving back to the community is so important. So having somebody like you as our guest, as our friend, means a whole lot.
I think one of the things that how people could help in these areas, you know, drowning is one of the leading causes of death for children. Okay. And so when I read or hear that, it emotionally impacts me immediately, and immediately refreshes my need to continue what I'm doing, because, you know, zero drownings is what we're looking for. African-American kids and young adults, especially boys and young men, drown at a higher rate than everybody else. And people, kids with autism, drown at an unbelievable rate than every other kid. We're talking about kids with autism. It depends on what year it is, but drowning is either the number one or the number two cause of death of children up to age 14 with autism. Wow. And we got to stop that. So we have got to train aquatic instructors on how to get kids with disabilities into the water and teach them how to swim.
Absolutely.
I'm happy to spread the word around here locally, you know, and just one voice to start it, right? To start moving it.
Yes.
Again, listening to you talk, I can't help but feel inspired all over again, even your story.
Thank you so much.
The passion.
You know what's going to be opening very soon? It was supposed to open last year, and then we had that hurricane, and it decimated this particular project. But in the Philadelphia Waterworks building, in the basement, it should be opening very soon, an exhibit called Pool, POOL. And basically what it is an exhibit showing also like the racism in aquatics, how it's the historical piece, especially in the Philadelphia area. And it's going to be a really, really great exhibit. So I'm looking forward to that for the diversity in aquatics piece.
Is there a date for that yet?
You know what? I don't know that at this minute, but I think it's going to be really phenomenal. It will really tell a little bit of a history of swimming, you know, in Philadelphia, especially, but especially with the Black and Brown community. And hopefully I didn't get to meet Jim Ellis, whose namesake I got the award from. So I'm hoping to figure out when he's going to be there so that I can meet him.
Awesome. Monica, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Like I said, we are truly inspired. You keep plugging away.
Thank you.
Look forward to supporting you. And thank you so much for coming on.
Loved having you, Monica. Thank you. All right. So as you heard, she is very much involved emotionally, physically, spiritually, I think with these adaptive activities and stuff. And I can say, as her former student, I was a part of her program. And unfortunately, the student that I was paired with has since passed away. But that moment, that time frame as a student, like, completely changed my life. You know, being in the military, you work with people who may have mental health issues or have a physical disability, but it's a little different when you're working with children. And so one of the reasons why Monica or Doc, you know, has been such an influence in my life is because of what she opened me up to, you know, heart, mind, soul. Like, she has literally, in every, you know, sense of the word, I know I like to use that word often, dedicated her life to making sure that they have a place. And to me, that's remarkable. And you hear it, right? And I didn't know the origin of this story. And I can't believe, you know, as her student, was at college for 4 years, I never asked her how it started. And I'm thinking about it now and it gives me goosebumps to care that much so early on and then to continue for decades, you know, ensuring that these kids are getting the opportunity to have a place like everybody else should. And she just launched another thing. I saw her on social media yesterday. She launched a new program. It's CORE. And so she's teaching the CORE movements to these kids and so that they have more opportunities. It's just, take a chance, you know, look her up, become a part of it, whether it's one day a month or one day a year, just kind of submit yourself to what she does and experience it. I love her.
Yeah, I think it's always fascinating that to anybody who's driven, it's always interesting to hear sort of where that fire comes from. I think, to me, it's just absolutely fascinating and super insightful. And obviously, Monica's drive has carried on past retirement into, you know, where she could very easily just sort of put her feet up and relax. It's carried on, you know, forward, and she continues to push to try to affect change. And I think that's so incredibly impressive. So that was an awesome. I love talking to Monica. It was really great. Speaking of drive, next week we are bringing on a woman who is described in some spaces as a force. Dana Spain is one of a kind, just an absolute business
icon.
Yeah, just crushing. And also someone who's not only, you know, concerned with conquering the world and being business savvy and being a successful businesswoman, but also is trying to do good in our community, which is something obviously near and dear to our hearts.
Yeah. She, and not just with civilians but like veterans too. And that's where she and I met. So do not forget to send in stories of how you are conquering your world. We want to share you. We want to give you the recognition that you deserve. And we want to maybe get you on our podcast. So send it in to teamctwpod@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook at @TeamCTWPod, #TeamCTW.
Absolutely. Make sure you like, follow, subscribe, and review the Team CTW Conquer the World podcast wherever it is you find your podcast. And of course, as always, this episode has been produced by Anthony Palmer of the Palm Tree Co. Production. We're super grateful for his talents and his efforts on our behalf. And until next time, I'm Nick.
I'm Erica.
We're out.